And China is reportedly upping its disinformation strategy in the wake of the pandemic. And even though the quantity of that disinformation is new, the style is very familiar. NPR's Miles Parks reports.
Before April of last year, China had basically no presence on Twitter. There were just a few accounts scattered among hundreds of ambassadors and officials. The platform is actually blocked inside China. But Beijing's game plan has changed.
Between September and December, we saw more accounts come online in that 3 months than they had in the existence of Twitter before that.
That's Brett Schaefer. He's the Media and Digital Disinformation Fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy think tank. The organization has been tracking Russian internet activity since shortly after the 2016 election. It recently expanded its database to monitor Chinese online activity as well. It tracks Twitter posts by Chinese officials and also monitors official media channels and statements to the United Nations.
If you're looking at any one of the slices of China's international messaging, you're probably missing the complete picture. So the dashboard essentially was set up as a way of seeing the entire picture.
A few trends have emerged from seeing that picture. One is a move toward a more confrontational style of messaging. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hua Chunying, for instance, started her Twitter account last October. She now has almost 400,000 followers. A quick look at her profile, and you can see her calling out a White House trade advisor, a State Department spokesperson, and a U.S. congressman just in the past 3 weeks.
Once the government started recognizing the scale of the crisis, they also sort of went into what I would characterize as damage control mode to try to change the narrative about the virus.
That's Laura Rosenberger, who runs the Alliance for Securing Democracy. She says one of the damage control strategies has been pushing a number of different stories about where the outbreak started, despite all signs pointing to Wuhan, China. Rosenberger says that kind of messaging has a long track record.
That's a strategy we've frequently seen Russia use.
In 2014, for instance, after Russian-backed forces shot down a Malaysian Airlines flight in Ukraine.
Russia, in order to deflect blame from itself for shooting down that aircraft, spread multiple different conspiracy theories about why the aircraft may have actually come down. Not necessarily to convince anybody of one particular idea, but to say it's really impossible to know what happened in this case.
Another messaging theme that the database reveals is just how much China wants to promote itself as a global helper now that it seems to have the virus under control within its own borders. Here's a clip from a Chinese state media video published to YouTube about how China deserves praise for its response.
So for the rest of the world, China has been the bellwether, has really given the rest of the world a lot of information about what this virus does in populations.
The million-dollar question, as Schaefer puts it, is whether this is all a temporary messaging strategy or a sea change in how China looks to craft its global impact. He says the fact that some elements started cropping up during the Hong Kong protests last year may indicate a sustained shift.
Around Hong Kong was the first time that we actually saw Western social media companies, Facebook and Twitter, take down accounts that they had attributed to being run by the Chinese government, covert accounts. So the kind of activity that we saw from Russia, we saw that for the first time being connected back to China.
That would seem to suggest a trend, Schaefer says, that this may be a strategy China can lean on whenever its core interests are threatened. Miles Parks, NPR News, Washington.